guys, welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Natasha Graziano, and this today's show has been a long time coming. I am sitting with one of the biggest infomercial hosts. In fact, the top infomercial host, rated the top infomercial host with over 2.5 billion, that's with a B, sales. This woman is one of the leading entrepreneurs in the US. She is one of the top coaches, top public speakers. She hits the top in every single area. You know who I'm talking about. You've probably seen her on late night television. She is an amazing talk show host. She's an amazing woman, amazing mother, and an amazing wife. Welcome to the show.
I'm an amazing friend. Yes,
yes. Yes. Oh, so Riley.
This has been such a long time.
When you meet souls who are in that same frequency, you really attract. And what's amazing about us is it doesn't matter how long we don't see each other for. It's just as exciting.
You and I know each other in another life. I know. I'm going to picture something Egyptian.
Yes.
Something very glamorous.
That's so funny. I was in my past life. I've been told numerous times that I was, what's her name?
Cleopatra.
Well, I think I was Cleopatra, damn it.
Well, maybe, so maybe you were too.
But a long time.
About you, I know.
Well, I mean, you know, and the funny thing for us is we hung out on Clubhouse for a
and
while.
And that's where it was. Every time you came on, I was so excited. I was like, Forbes is here. Yes, I love her.
And for those of you who don't know what Clubhouse was, it was the only place you could be public without makeup on.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
So did that I. Was, in our pajamas.
It was a life-changing experience for me personally. But let's go back to the beginning.
Yes, let's go right back. How did you become this huge icon and you have this enormous world of people who buy from you and benefit their life every single day? You're
Three
changing
words.
Lives.
Laws of attraction.
Wow.
Okay. I'm not kidding because there was no other rhyme or reason how I got here. This is not, I didn't even know here existed. And I don't know if you knew your here existed either. I didn't have any role models growing up. But I had a very awkward, weird childhood.
Right.
And I now get to preach. I think the fact that I've lived as long as I have
right.
is that I get to teach the lessons that I didn't read from a book, but that I've lived. So when I say things like life happens for you, not
right.
to you,
right.
that is my motto, that you are the sum of the obstacles you overcome.
Right.
No kidding. So I don't know, where did you grow up in the UK?
I grew up in the UK. You grew up here?
I grew up on Long Island, New York.
Oh,
I grew up talking like this.
You don't have it anymore.
Why would I? Who's going to buy from me if I talk like this, right?
That's
you know, only Fran Drescher could get away with this shit.
Right. I love the New York. What's up, coffee?
And so two beautiful, loving parents, which I think is probably the biggest gift the universe gave me.
Right.
Now that I've done all this work in personal development and trained hundreds of thousands of people, having two parents who love you is really cool. Having anybody who loves you is really cool. But I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I went off to first grade,
right.
and they noticed my teeth went in all different directions. And my beautiful Ukrainian parents, I guess, never noticed this.
You're Ukrainian Jewish too?
100%.
I'm a mix of, obviously, Lebanese, Greek from Cyprus, Italian, Russian, Ukrainian, Jewish.
That was a fun night.
Yeah, I know. Somebody went around the world. Oh my God, it's a mix, isn't it? Wow,
yeah.
I didn't even know that
yeah,
about you.
Yeah, I didn't really. I just thought I grew up. I was Russian, but you know, definitely
That's,
this New Yorker energy.
Wow.
And there's definitely there's something about when I finally grew up
yeah.
and met Ukrainian women.
Right.
Met. You know,
you
people from
it.
The, yeah, it's like there's an energy to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, I know, there
and
is.
And a passion and a fire that you can't explain. People are like, how do you get that way?
And a directness as well.
Yes.
It's a certain energy. I wonder why I'm always so direct with people, but when you go back and you actually look at the culture there, it's
survival.
Right.
And women survived because they were strong.
Mm.
So here I am, this kind of cute little kid, but with really awkward teeth. And I have this other motto that everyone does the very best they can at that moment. So as wonderful as my parents were, they had a really bad orthodontist, put me in braces. Did you wear braces?
No.
Okay. Not 1 year, not two, not three, not five, but eight. So now can you imagine this cute little 8-year-old all the way up to 16 with a full set of metal.
Wow.
But when I was about 8 and a half, they put me in a tongue thruster. They screw this thing to my mouth and now I can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 2 years, I can't talk to anybody. And I have frizzy hair. I'm overweight. My mother loved to feed us. I was really smart and really lonely. I had zero friends growing up. Nobody wanted to talk to me. My friends were my mom and my dad. And I would come home and I would enjoy my schoolwork. Television, dreaming to be anybody other than me. And then I broke my nose. I hit some sort of baseball bat. But all of a sudden, as a young girl, I have a nose that goes like this. And you'll see. No, you guys will see the picture.
Yeah, in the picture. Here
and
we
when
go.
You see this picture, you're going to go, oh, that poor little girl. She really is ugly.
Oh my God.
And it's a fact. You know, if Marcia Brady was pretty with straight blonde hair and a cute little nose, I was the exact opposite of that. And so I put my head down. And my mother always had this, you know, success is for other people. It's not, we're doing just fine.
Mm.
And I love that, you know. Her parents, grandfather was a butcher. Grandmother ran the numbers and raised bulldogs. And I think my mother grew up on the couch in the living room because they had nowhere to live.
Right.
And so now we've got a house and whatever and opportunities. And she's like, just enjoy this. And she used to collect pictures of movie stars
wow.
and get their autographs. But she would never really want to leave the house. And I looked at this woman who was 260 pounds my whole life, who loved me and took care of me. And I said, you know what? I love you. I don't want to be you. Mm. I want to be the people I see on television. That's I want to powerful. Be Jane Fonda. I want to be Katherine Hepburn. I want to own more than one t-shirt and a couch that doesn't have plastic on it. And not that I were putting them down, I'm going to start to cry, but I'm like, there is so much more that you guys don't even see that we could do. Then I've got my dad. My dad is a magician.
Right.
Made me do magic tricks when I was little. Any talent show, I made things appear and disappear and cut girls in half and made, I was, only boys were magicians. So it was very odd to be a girl magician. And then he was an inventor and a dreamer. And he had this garage full of crazy things. And I was the oldest girl, only two of us. And he would make things. He made, okay, imagine this. I have a garbage can, a lawnmower engine, and some paper mache, and I had a go-kart that looked like the Batmobile.
Wow.
Right, cool now. But when you're the kid on the street, those are the weird family at the end of the block. My dad would make things explode and blow up and had flare little airplanes.
Which is so cool. My son would absolutely love that.
Nobody loved it except me. And I would sit and I would be in awe of all the things he did. And one day he turns to me and he said, kiddo, how do I get my ideas out to the world? I'm like, Dad, I have no idea. I'm 8. And I remember that so clearly because he never got any of his amazing inventions out. And when he died and the trash guys came and cleaned out his garage.
You kept everything.
No, I couldn't keep anything. I was a transient. I was living in New York. I was working.
No,
I didn't keep anything. I didn't even understand about storage containers. And they threw all of his stuff out. And a lot of it looked like junk anyway.
Right.
And I realized that when you're gone, all your wacky ideas are gone too. And it just fired me. I did a couple of things. One, I sought out inventors all over the country. I went to conventions and I put them on infomercials. I put them on live home shopping. I've made millionaires. I've created legacies for other families because I couldn't do it for my own.
Wow.
So all of that's interesting. We're in the hospital one day. My dad slips and cuts off the front of his hand. I'm 15 years old and now that beautiful man's going to spend 3 years in the hospital. As if we weren't broke enough and shattered enough. One day, and this is where everything changed, and you're going to love this law of attraction story. My mother is in the hospital room with me, and she said, kiddo, we have no money for college. We are absolutely broke, which is the only dream I really had. And my dad's doctor, she said, but there's a beauty pageant that's coming to town, the Miss Teenage America pageant. She looks at my face and says, yeah, that's not going to work for us.
Oh, my God.
That was probably one of the lowest moments because it's a very long time ago and can't forget it.
The fact that you remember that memory says it really left a deepened wound.
Oh, yes.
Inside of you.
And well, it has to do with being pretty, which is why I'm obsessed with being pretty. So get this. My dad's doctor turns to my mother and said, I'm going to fix your daughter's nose. Now, when you look at this picture, okay, when you look at this before and after.
Right.
They're completely little different girls. I woke up from this surgery and I was cute. Like, my eyes got bigger.
How old were you when you had the surgery?
15 and a half.
You had it so young.
And not knowing, because my dad's doctor looked, my nose was really broken. Like, it wasn't like I had a cute little bump. He's like, your daughter's nose is deformed.
Wow.
And so they fixed that. The braces come off. And I said to myself, you know what? And I don't know how. I'm going to win this competition. One of these little girls, there were 500 girls in the first competition that were going on TV with Bob Hope on NBC. And my dad showed up with his big bandage on one hand. And I remember saying either to myself or him, somebody's going to be on TV with Bob Hope and it's going to be me.
Wow.
And here's the crazy thing. It was 3 weeks of auditions. I had a hand-me-down bridesmaid's dress because I couldn't afford anything. It's a powder blue thing. But I can remember very clearly the finals. All the girls are standing there. I got called into the semifinals. The judges are down there. And they ask these questions. And my parents are right back there. And I remember thinking, I'm not doing this for me. I don't care about me or pageants. I care about them. I want to make them happy. And I remember when they called my name, I have a picture of this, and I'll show you that picture. And you still look at the expression on my face. That was the start of everything. That was the start of understanding if you believe it, you really can achieve it.
Did you win?
No. Well, here's the part about that. I'm so excited, right?
The fact you're in the semifinal is
No. I won Miss Teenage New York. I won that pageant. Yes.
Oh my God.
I absolutely got to go.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. I got to go to the Nationals. I represented my state. But when I got there, now it's funny because you to me represent a very glamorous, beautiful woman. I don't know when you decided that you were.
Oh, a very similar story. I had a crazy nose, but we'll go there later.
Right. So what happened was we get there, we're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know where that is? It's like the middle of the country.
Middle of
1977.
Nowhere.
And there's a lot of racial tension, a lot of prejudice in this country going on. And the girls, most of them, many of them, grew up wanting to be pageant girls. They were so cute and so pretty, and they planned for that their whole life.
Right.
And they looked at me and said, y'all have the funniest accent I ever heard. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I have an accent. How we talk? What's wrong with her? What is a bagel? I'm sorry, what? It's like a donut without the sugar. You know, you're nice even for a Jew. I'm like, excuse me? Where are your horns? How come all the Jews in my town are... And I'm like, I don't represent... I'm not even that religious, but I don't... You guys don't like me at all. It was... And then they brought on 50 guys from the Southern Baptists to be our escorts. None of them like Jews. And I am now experiencing the worst week of my life while I'm on television living out my dream. But you know, again, remember, life doesn't happen for you, it happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. I left with a sense of, I'm going to fight for the underdog. Nobody should feel this bad. And because of several things that happened, one, and I just booked a TEDx talk, and I know you did yours in Boca. I followed
yes.
religiously.
Love
I didn't book one, I booked two. One of them that I'm going to do is all about my pitching and what I do now.
Love this.
But the one in New Jersey called, and they're doing a thing called Urban Mosaic.
Mm.
I said, you know, I have a story that I've never told, and it means everything to me. I'm 10 years old, at fifth grade, and we go to school, and as soon as we get in the door, everybody with brown eyes has to stay after school, gets extra homework, gets treated really bad.
What?
And everybody with blue eyes gets to go home early, gets extra credit, and they're the wild child who will go. And I'm like, I got Hazel. See, they're kind of green. She said, no, you go with the brown-eyed kids. And for an entire week in school, we are treated like crap. It's very hard to understand why nobody likes us, what's wrong with us. It was very traumatic. The end of the week, the principal calls us in and says, so, how do y'all feel? And we're protesting. He says, guys, you live in a very white arena. It's 1970, in Long Island, New York. Everybody in all directions was white. The only difference was Jewish and Italian. We called it pizza, pasta, and matzah. He said, but around the country, there's a lot of people who can't change their skin color. How bad do you feel because you can't change your eye color? And it's like, oh my God, okay.
Wow, so you got to experience what racism would feel like.
In an intense way at 10 years old.
What they put you through that to show you guys are living a very sheltered lifestyle, so here's what it feels like for the rest of the world. I mean, I have black babies, so I can sit here and be like, I cannot imagine if she were to go through something.
Oh, it was way more traumatic. It's a big exercise. It's a big experiment. It didn't really work because it kind of traumatized a lot of us in two different ways. One, when blue contacts came out, do you remember that phrase?
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to get them because somewhere I thought blue might be better.
Oh,
how shallow is that? But I go off to college and my first roommate is black. And I adore her. We dance the same. We got lips the same. I'm like, what's the big deal? Black people are wonderful. I mean, I swear it was like, I don't know what the big problem was. So we become really tight. That Thanksgiving, I said, you're coming home with me. You need to meet my parents. I called my folks and they both were like, you're not bringing a black kid home for dinner. We're out for Thanksgiving. I'm like, okay, wow. I said, I'm going home with you. Kesha calls her parents. You know what they say? You're not bringing home a little white girl for Thanksgiving.
No way.
Yeah.
Both ways.
And so the two of us decided we weren't going home for Thanksgiving. We stayed at school, and I had just seen a Broadway play that was very diverse. And in my college, how shallow is this, in the early 70s, black acting group, white acting mm-hmm. group, they never worked together. And I said, that doesn't work for me. And at 19, I put them together. We did this musical. We invited
yes.
the whole community. I mean, it was insane.
I love this. Right. You put everybody in the same, and you said, we're doing this.
And we did it, and it was mm-hmm. wildly successful.
Oh, I love that.
37 years later, last year, I get a knock on my door going, we're from the University of Rochester. We'd like to give you a plaque and this newspaper article that talks about you being the first one to put the black and white acting groups together. Somebody noticed. I thought that was very, very sweet. And like, wow, I guess it mattered a little bit more than I realized. And then when I got to Los Angeles here, I met my husband, 6'6", big white guy, who had an affinity for whatever, social justice, and he gets a kid in the Big Brother, Little Brother program. And Dexter is blacker than your hair, from South Central, this little 8-year-old who's got an attitude. He doesn't like white people. None of it. And I'm going to teach you that we're all wonderful and you and I are going to be amazing. 12 years of our life together, best man at my wedding, first kid that I did everything for. I then get pregnant with my twins. 6 months after my babies are born, Dexter's walking down near South Central, right near USC and not far from Beverly Hills, from his haircut, from a church haircut to church. He's on Hoover Street. And a kid who wanted to get into a gang walked up behind my boy because he was wearing blue and shot him 10 times in the back and left him for dead on the street. My wedding photo was on the cover of the LA Times.
You were there?
No. I was in LA, but my wedding photo, Dexter and me and Tom, we tracked down the killer, spent 3 years doing that, and he's spending 52 years to life in jail. Now, I don't know why I have this story. Why does a little white girl from Long Island, New York, fell in love with this beautiful kid and has to go through all this? Because the story needs to matter.
You know what? It's such a powerful thing to understand why we go through these stories, but the truth is, I've come to realize why I went through such a traumatic life so far in many ways, and how I've come out of it so well. And the reason that people like you and I do go through those heavy things in our life is because we are meant to share it.
Yes.
Because we are meant to go out there in the world and give that gift of what we've overcome to the world to show them how to overcome it.
Yes.
There's no reason why somebody like you and I would need to go through something like that, but we had to in order to be who we are. Nobody would give a fuck, and they wouldn't right. listen to us, and they wouldn't want to learn from you if you hadn't have been through it.
That's exactly
they
right.
They want to listen to you. They want to learn. So of course you're doing two TED Talks and one on this, you know, I know that icon of topic, and one because you have so much to share. Exactly. Somebody who sits at a dinner table is barely going through anything, barely ever been through anything. Right. It's fucking boring.
I know. If you have a silver spoon in your life and life is great, congratulations. Love you, yep. but I'm not that
and
interested.
Well done. Go do philanthropy. Use your money. Use your abundance of free time okay. and go and help you. When people sit, and I have one sibling in my family, I won't say which one. she knows which one she is. I'm sorry, sis. And I'm the oldest of five. And she sits, and she was so depressed for so many years. As in, she was as sad, and this is a really awful time, but she was suicidal at her worst. Mm. She's been on medication almost her whole life. And I told her, you know why you are so deeply depressed? We've all come from the same thing, and I've gotten out of it and done this, and da-da-da-da-da, and everybody's gotten out, gotten married, done this. You, maybe this particular number in the five, but you are going through this because you don't have a bigger picture.
Right.
You focus on your own problems and not other people's problems. Whew. I focus on solutions for other people's problems. I focus, when I'm not feeling great, on somebody else that doesn't feel great either. In fact, they feel worse than me because it puts things in perspective and you focus on other people. Then you go and do philanthropy and all of a sudden, you have no problems.
Right, thank you. Do something nice for someone else. You know the best thing you can do with money? Give it to someone else and make them happy. It feels so good.
It feels so good.
Right.
Do you prefer giving gifts than receiving?
Oh, absolutely.
I know.
I get a little awkward about receiving. It's kind of nice. But I will tell you, giving and giving random gifts. You know what? Whether it's your time or your treasures,
yes.
giving of yourself
yes.
is where happiness lives. No one taught me that. That's why a show like this exists. So you can hear that that is the true source of happiness.
I agree.
Making other people happy.
Absolutely. You're writing a book. Please tell me that
you I've got lots of books. I've got
a
new one coming out.
A new one, yeah.
Well, you know, they're kind of in order. So the one that's coming out now is called Pitch Secrets A to Z.
Ooh.
So somewhere along the journey of this beautiful... By the way, I also have a movie that just came out.
What?
Like a feature film. I know.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you, thank you.
Did you produce?
No, I didn't. This one... So there's a tract here. People go, how many lives can you have? I'm like, as many as you freaking want.
You do.
I went to college to be a lawyer. When I realized I didn't want to be a lawyer, I wanted to play a lawyer on TV. I was like, I don't really want to study all that and do this.
Right.
I, growing up in high school, was always cast as the chorus or townsperson number three way in the back. I never got the lead. I never got lines. And I kept looking at those girls who did. And I was so, how come nobody can see me? And I think that's I'm glad I didn't get seen for so long.
Right.
Because I relate to people who are not seen, which is almost everyone. So I'm in college, my senior year, and I audition for Shakespeare's As You Like It. Like I've always auditioned, and I go to the call board, and I expect to see my name somewhere at the bottom, and it's not there. And Natasha, I had this moment where I thought, I guess I'm really not any good. And it's so funny, because I remember that moment too. And I said, well, let me see which one of these wonderful, amazing women at school got it. I get to the top, the role of Rosalind is, Forbes Riley? Wait, what? My name was at the very top. And I remember thinking, I think they made a mistake. And I went to the professor, David Richmond, and I said, what's the deal here? He's like, you're my ideal Rosalind. I'm like, oh, come on. He said, no. He said, all the things that you've been through, who you are, how you show up, this you are my Rosalind. And I'm like, and he told me a lot of things that only I had thought about myself. He had a lot of depth and insight. And you want to see something crazy? You and I have been judged our whole lives on how we look, haven't we? Professor David Richmond was 100% legally blind.
No way.
He couldn't see any of the bullshit that people saw. He only saw who I was.
Gosh, that's a beautiful story.
That essence allowed me to pick up the phone and call my beautiful parents and say, I love you, thank you for the education, but I'm going to be an actress in New York. And they're like, we can't help you. And I'm like, I know. I'm going to be okay. And I moved into a tiny little studio apartment, a little bit bigger than this square right here. And I landed the lead in the first feature film I ever auditioned for, called Splatter University. Now, it's still out there. It's kind of this fun little slasher movie.
So beautiful.
And my character is the lead. And then I landed a couple more, and I ended up doing, I ended up being on Broadway, did soap operas. But I also had all these other issues. I was chunky. And in a time when skinny was really important, I was chunky. I'm on Broadway, and they made me go to Overeaters Anonymous. I'm on soap operas standing next to Meg Ryan and Julianne Moore. By the way, so for example, I've got a water bottle here. Do you guys think the water bottle looks fat?
No.
It looks like a water bottle.
Right.
You put it next to a finger, it looks fat. Mm-hmm. That was me. I was kind of fine till you put me next to somebody super skinny on television, and I could never get there. Turns out I had a bit of an eating disorder. And so my whole life now I'm dealing with people liking my talent but not liking my body. Man, I will tell you, Hollywood is brutal. New York was brutal. And so I did all of those things. And then I did something crazy. I'm like, how long is our show? Like 4 hours?
I know. Girl, we actually need a part two, which is great because we'll do that. We'll do that.
Well, I'm going to tell I'm debating if I should tell you something that I did.
Yes.
So in my 20s, I did two things that I've never really talked about.
Okay.
And I think you have to get to this age to talk about them. Mm-hmm. The first was when I finally got cute, I got chased around a lot of desks. You need an agent, right? I remember very clearly one of my agent appointments was a lunch meeting at a hotel, thinking it was at the restaurant in the hotel. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, room 1127. Okay, I go up to 1127 and there's a whole lunch spread, only I was also on the menu. I was very naive. I did not know that people did this. It didn't dawn on me at all. And luckily, he was a small kind of guy, and we literally, physically chased me around a bed. And I'm thinking, you're such a peep, I'm gonna punch you. And I left, and I thought, well, okay, I need an agent. And again, I never really admitted this before. But I went home and I said I created an agency called CMA, Creative Management for Artists. And I hired a British woman. And Lindsay Maxwell loved Forbes Riley. Oh my God. She would call every, she was a ballsy older woman. And she would go, Forbes is this one. And I booked commercials and movies and television. And I had massive imposter syndrome because I was Lindsay Maxwell. And I did this whole dual thing for 3 years.
You're fucking kidding. I love you. That is the best story. Thank you for sharing this. Because do the impression because I didn't know.
Oh, Lindsay. Oh, my God.
Close your eyes. Close your eyes or don't look at the screen.
So let me tell you about this absolutely wonderful actress that I discovered in New York.
Oh my God. You're right. It could be somebody else.
Yeah,
you're excellent at acting. Well, we know that.
Well, good actress, yes. Great pitcher. So isn't that ironic? I was the first person I
pitched. But you are the best pitcher. You teach people to pitch. You taught me this quote. People don't give a shit what you do. They care what you can do for them.
Bingo. When you nail that, you as a business owner, you become unstoppable.
So tell us how to pitch. How do you do the best pitch ever? You are the queen of pitching. Okay. You are nicknamed the queen of pitch, right?
Well, I have $2.5 billion in sales. Now, my computer, my career took a little bit of an interesting turn. So when I landed in L.A., I'm also weirdly talented as it comes out. Do you know The Laugh Factory?
Yes, of course. They have here in L.A.
Do you know that I was the host of that for 3 years?
No.
Oh, yeah. My God. Every Friday and Saturday night, Jamie Masada, the owner of The Laugh Factory, let me... I'm hosting Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know why I'm not more famous, but Ellen DeGeneres. Everybody was anybody at that time. I was the Friday and Saturday night host. I also started the X Games. I'm going to send you some clips and some video because you guys have to watch... I'm very, very cautious on saying everything I tell you, I can prove on YouTube. Everything.
My gosh.
The other thing we jokingly talked about is infomercials happened. I ended up giving Kim Kardashian her very first TV job ever.
You're kidding.
No. And I go,
you put Kim Kardashian on TV?
Watch the clip. So seriously, I had just done an infomercial with Bruce Jenner on vitamins. And we became friends. He invited me to the house. Then I interviewed Kris Jenner on how do you raise kids. She was my very first...
Now, what a phenomenal guest. Oh, my gosh.
Well, this was a strange thing. So as outgoing as I am, I'm still a little shy and introverted. Mm-hmm. I do some things really boldly, and then I screw up a lot.
Right.
Okay? I don't know why. So it's kind of funny. I wanted to write a book, my very first book, and I know you've written books. And so what happened was my babies were about 6 months old. Mm-hmm. Dexter had been murdered. My ex-husband's sitting on a couch, not functioning well, and I'm just working all the time. And you know, when you work, it gets you more work and you start mm-hmm. to get famous. now people are starting to notice me and wanting to pull me away from my kids, and we're into shopping and stuff. And I'm like, okay, how do you raise kids if you're a famous mom and not screw it up? Mm-hmm. At that moment, Anderson Cooper's younger brother, jumps out of a window and kills himself in front of his mother, Gloria Vanderbilt, like the premier old money family. And I thought, wait a second, how do you get to be that rich and that famous and have a kid do that to you? Where did you screw up? And I don't want to screw up like that. So I said, there's got to be a book out there, and there was none. I said, I'm going to write this book. I'm going to interview famous women who have kids older than a certain age. How did you do it? Kris Jenner was my very first interview.
And she's done it very, very well.
Well, also, you have to remember, this is 20 years ago. The kids were little. Kendall was this tall. Kylie was this tall.
Right.
And we went to the house, and we talked, and she said things I'd never heard before. I didn't hear anyone who got up at 5 a.m., who was on the treadmill, who has it. Kris was amazing. Unfortunately, I didn't video I audio taped it in a restaurant. Then I went on to Florence Henderson from Brady Bunch. Then I went on to Shirley Jones from David Cassidy.
My gosh.
And I plan on doing this whole book. Now get this and track with me as a coach. I take it to my male manager here in town, and I showed him what I'm doing. I'm so proud of myself. It's called Being Mom, like the secrets of how you raise kids, whatever. And he says, why are you doing this? I said, because I'm passionate about it. He said, but that's not you need a manifesto about what you're doing. I think you should have a book called Been There, Sold That, The Secrets of the $2.5 Billion Host. Like, I don't want to write that. I want to write this. And he intimidated me enough that I put that book in the drawer. Mm. Do you know where it lives? It's still in the drawer.
Oh my God, we have to get it out there. This is like the most incredible thing.
I know. Believe me.
You have to pull it out of the drawer.
Well, you guys are witnessing this. We're going to pull it out of the drawer, and Natasha's going to go, let's get this out there.
Yes, this is the most incredible thing ever.
Well, thank you very much for that.
You've created something which is, because of who's on it and when and what, it's like a docu-something that should be on Netflix.
Well, there you go. You've heard it right here.
Yes, I 100% agree. So what did you end up... How did you get into infomercials?
Okay, I walked into a television studio down the street. I'm just acting, and I'm doing very well. And there's a pen on the desk, and a little camera, and says, sell me this pen. If I gave you a pen, what would you do? Look at that camera. 10 seconds, go.
Okay. This pen is going to change your life. When you use this, it's not only going to help you to write your goals down, it's going to help you to achieve them. Without the pen, you won't remember the things that you need to remember. It's your to-do list, it's your goals, and it's everything you ever need.
Did you just say the word need?
Yeah, is that bad?
Well, because you just said it before. Stop telling people what they need. So here, in your enthusiasm, this is what everyone does wrong. And it's how you
were... Did I say need?
You did. But not only did you say it, you projected it.
Oh, fuck. This is great. This is the best moment ever. I'm learning how to sell.
You literally were like, this pen is what you need to write your... And that's what you were doing. The problem is people don't buy what they need. They buy what they want. So your job as a pitch was to get them to want it.
What was your pitch?
Don't ask me how I knew this, but I looked at the pen, looked at the camera and said, you know... What do you think about pens? I was 15 and a half years old when I went to college. I skipped a year of high school. I was really smart, but really lonely and insecure. My mother would write me longhand notes every day. I would run to the mailbox to get them so I could feel safe. I realized a pen like this can reach out and touch somebody's heart.
Oh, wow. You pulled in the emotional strings.
I didn't even know. Jake of Body by Jake comes out, grabs my fish, and you're going to make me a lot of money. He had this idea when cable TV launched to do a 24-hour health and fitness network, and he was going to launch the idea that we should sell health and fitness on television. No one was doing that. When you watch this clip, that is me 30-some-odd years ago. I sold 1,500 products in 5 years. We sold the network to Fox for $500 million in 1993. At that time, based on what he and I had done, infomercials started. They had no female hosts. In fact, one of the problems with infomercials is usually guys. Guys are on the boardwalk going, hey, you can take this knife, little lady, and slice a can and a tomato. And that was what they were doing. Well, on television, that was a bit too much. So they put me next to them. I kind of calmed them down, asked them questions, and then turned to camera and closed. And I was really good at that.
Give me your best close. You're so good at this. Okay, let's say you had to close this water. Bear in mind, we all have fucking water. And we love it so much, but there's a million of them. Okay, let's go.
So there's two things about water. Number one, when you're selling a product, do you think about price?
No. Yes, actually, I do. Yeah. When I'm selling or buying.
When you're selling.
Oh, when I'm...
Or even when you're buying.
When I'm buying, yeah.
But watch how price changes.
Right.
And this is why, as an entrepreneur, that's the last thing you should be worried about. But value is what you want to deliver.
Okay.
This is what? Probably about 25 cents in the grocery store, right? Mm-hmm. It's about $2 if you go to the convenience store. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a hotel, how much is the same bottle?
$3.
$8. Oh, no, it's like $8 or $9 sitting next to the TV, right? I personally take great offense to that greed. You don't need to be charged. And I usually walk in and I can't believe it's $8. But if you arrive at 11:30 at night, nothing's open, you're thirsty, and you just like, I need some water.
You're going to use
They're like, here's my $8. I want water. I want water. And so that's kind of an interesting phenomenon. The next thing that's really interesting is people always say, Forbes, you're so good you could sell ice to Eskimos.
Yes, we've heard this a million times. I've seen it.
You know, Eskimos don't need ice. That's why I'm so good. I would never sell ice to an Eskimo. They don't want it. They want firewood and blankets. That's what I would choose to sell to them. So one of the things that you want to stop doing when you have a product or service is stop worrying about the product or service. You have a solution. Mm-hmm. So what are you promoting right now? Give me one thing.
Okay, I am promoting my new scripting society. So it's where they come in and they learn how to script their dream life for love, money, and happiness.
Okay, so let's just call that a solution.
Okay.
What's the biggest problem someone has who wants that?
They don't have the money. They don't have love. They don't have happiness. They're lacking in multiple areas in their life. They don't know how to get out of their rut, and they don't know how to use the metaphysics. They're just looking at what's around them.
So let's question flip that. Hey, if you're somebody who's looking for love, you've been very disconnected, and you really want to get onto what it means to love the laws of attraction and hang out with a superstar, I've got a solution for you. Mm. All of a sudden, they're like, I don't even know what it is, but I want it. I want whatever this beautiful woman is offering.
So you take out the word need.
Yep.
No longer use the word need.
And don't show the product until somebody wants it.
And do you ever talk about the price of it?
Oh, well, here's the thing. There's an architect and a range of how you pitch. Mm-hmm. But the intro, if you want someone to listen to you, if you screw up the intro, they're not over here for the outro. They don't care about the price if they don't want what you have.
Right.
So if I said to you, look, if you're thirsty, you go to a hotel late at night and there's just no water, I have a solution for you. Rather than worry about that, I've got a bottle. I've got this thermal. Comes from the Himalayas, keeps water cold for 24 hours, keeps coffee hot for 24 hours, and it weighs next to nothing, fits in your suitcase. Want one? Mm. All of a sudden you're like, okay, so now Forbes, tell me more. Now I'm going to go into what I call features and benefits. I'm going to tell you about what it is and why you want it, blah, 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 blah. And then the price is irrelevant. It's not irrelevant, and I will say what the price is.
Right, right.
This is now, and by the way, this is a luxury item, not for everybody, only for people who really want to take care of their health. Mm. Only people who are interested in convenience. Mm. Is that you? Yeah. And the more you go, yes, I want it, I want it. By the time I say this costs $89, you're like, okay, I want it.
I get it. So you go solution?
Yes.
Benefits and...
Solution problem.
Solution problem.
You know what it is. Now you have to figure out why they want it. What are those people suffering from?
So solution first and then problem.
Yes. Well, you have the solution, but you don't talk about it.
Right, right, right.
And you don't... And you all you want to do... Watch this. I'll predict this.
Okay.
I want you to... Want to see something cool?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody always says yes to that. So watch this. I have a product here. I have a product that I created. Along the other things, I am in the National Fitness Hall of Fame. And many years ago, I was doing a resistance band. I helped introduce those to the country. And it slipped off my foot and shattered my nose for the second time. And I said, I need to find something different. I'm on a mission to find a handheld fitness product. That and then a thing I called springboard story.
Yeah.
How deep can you go with your story? My mother was 260 pounds my whole life. I bought a year-long membership to Bally's Health Club. So proud of myself. I get her to the door and she says, I'm not going in. So what do you mean? She said, I can't. I said, yes, you can. Here's a membership. She said, I can't. She said, they all know what they're doing. They all look good and I don't want to be intimidated. And she left and she started crying. And I stood there at that moment, and I'm sure there's moments in your life when you've made decisions and said, I'm going to help not only my mom, but women and men who are stuck in the house, who don't think they can be physically fit. We can do this. So here's how I sell this. Put your arm up if you would. Feel the bottom of your arm. Does it feel nice and tight? Is it right down here a little weak? No, yours is actually very tight.
Yeah, I was a gymnast.
There you go. But I would say that a lot of people out there might have a little wiggle jiggle.
Right, yeah.
And when you take off your sweater, don't you feel a little uncomfortable about your arms? Mm-hmm. What if I told you that in 5 minutes a day, I could completely change that?
Angel? Really?
All you have to say is tell me more and I will. Otherwise, I'm not going to pitch anymore.
Yeah, tell me more.
That's the golden key to pitching. Give me your thumbs. Now, that's another phenomenon. I just say, give me your thumbs, and you did. And how weird is that? But I told you to and you did. So then, I'm going to put this here. You've never seen this, have you? This is my invention. It's called a spin gym. Make a fist. Mm-hmm. Put your feet both on the floor and go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. See, I get women to say, oh my God, all the time. Now come to the very edge of this chair. Mm-hmm. Sit up, very, very, very edge. And I want you to lean back. Lean back a little bit more. Lean back a little bit more. A little bit more. A little bit more. Right there. Go 10. Gonna keep it going. 8. Come on. 7. Look at that camera.
Why is it so tight?
Oh, I know. 3. Now watch this. Now you get a little frustrated. Put this on your heart. I want you to punch right to that camera. Punch. I'm not settling for anything. I'm real. Go.
That's incredible. You created this?
I did. I've sold a couple million of these things. I have sexy arms because of this. And it's based on the world's oldest toy known to man. It comes in every single color. And what you have to do to get it started, you have to wind it up. And I will tell you, I took this on home shopping. I've done $1 million in a day with this thing.
Oh my God, the queen of products. This is your own product.
I own it all, lock, stock, and barrel.
This part here.
Girlfriend, I am 65 years
you
old and
amazing.
I have a waist and abs and arms.
Your arms are tiny.
Wait, hang on,
you have abs from this?
Oh yeah.
How do you do this for abs?
You sit back here and you do this. I don't want to flash your camera, but if I really want to get kind of crazy.
Wow.
How many 65-year-olds are sitting on a chair doing this?
Wow.
And it's also how I met my husband.
Queen, this is so good. Oh. Okay, quickly. Husband and your body. The before and after is sensational.
Okay. 2 things I want to share with you because I would love a part 2, but I
have to do a part 2.
Now, this is where writing lists, this is where everything that you teach, I embody.
Okay.
I had an ex-husband after we lost Dexter, who was murdered. It was very challenging. For 10 years, I just raised my babies by myself because I didn't want to be in love. I didn't want to split my time. Like Thanksgiving, do you go to their house, our mm-hmm. house? So mm-hmm. for 10 years, I was pretty miserable. Working anywhere and wearing a really big smile, going, life is just great, mm-hmm. wasn't so great. And then somebody called me out on it. And I said, you know what? I have to redefine what love is in my life. And I made a really long list. And one of the things on the list is my ex, who was a chef, would roll over in the morning and go, what did a bear shit in your mouth? And I would start my day that way. And I had someone who ate away at my self-esteem and that I was living a lie for a long time, for probably about 10 years. And I said, one of the things I want is I want someone who rolls over in the morning with my mascara down my face and my hair all frizzy, says, I love you just the way you are. Mm. I wanted that. And then somebody gave me this. I put this at the top of my list. Said I wanted someone who looked like he walked off the cover of a romance novel.
Oh,
I am 57 at the time when I'm making this list. And it was a long mm-hmm. list. Mm-hmm. Then I put the list in the drawer. Didn't go on Tinder, didn't go to bars, just kept thinking about it. And I also looked at power couples. I looked at Randy
Gerber. Oh, I do this exact method.
Randy yes. Gerber and Cindy Crawford. Mm-hmm. I looked at Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen. I looked at Laird Hamilton and Gabrielle Reese. And I had those 3 pictures of these women who were gorgeous with a beautiful man. I said, that's what I want. All right, so I'm in my hotel room in Las Vegas and I'm doing a little spin gym video. And my videographer very sweetly says, do you want to meet a 2-time Mr. Arnold champion? Mm-hmm. And I said, no. I said, I'm good. Bodybuilders do not like this little deal. I said, no. He said, no, you're going to like him. So Joshua comes over, and he's a beautiful human being. He's been a fitness model, a fashion model, a Chippendale, and he does my spin gym, and he loves it. And we're done. We film. We leave. He took a picture of us. He posted it on Instagram. He is 17 years younger than me, and he said, I hope to work with this woman. She has the most amazing energy ever. And I'm like, and I saw that. So we started flirting on the internet and just kind of hanging out for 3 months. And one day I said, why don't you just come out to LA and see if this is anything? He gets on his motorcycle. A motorcycle? Oh no, I told my daughter, never date a guy on a motorcycle. My cousin lost her leg. The second thing, don't ever date a bodybuilder. They only like 3 things, working out, food, and themselves. So I've got this bodybuilder motorcycle ride guy coming over. And he takes off his helmet, and I'm going to show you a picture. That looks like every poster of every macho man you've ever seen. In all leather, and he walks over, and I'm like, oh my God, is somebody videoing this? And then reality hit. I thought, you're an idiot. Like in the same moment, I thought, he found out that you're on television or you have money, he's playing you. And I thought, okay, that'll be a fun weekend. And I really did, that's all I thought. He comes over, and you have him in the studio here. You might want to have him say the same thing. I said, what are you doing here, for real? He looked at me and he said, I'm not very religious. But something told me you need me. That was 8 years ago.
Oh, queen, and here you are now as an absolute iconic couple. The two of you are so fucking beautiful. The two of you are like, he's a fitness champ,
you
30 years.
Natasha,
like,
can you grab Joshua for a second? You guys at home, you have to see who we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you guys have to see this.
And he's in the studio. And before you do that, hang on one quick second. Before you do that, one quick second. So last year, we are on a trip, a school trip, Riker spring break for my kids. They're both 21 last year. We are snowmobiling in Iceland, mm-hmm. having a beautiful time. We get into a van with 16 people, and we're going home. And you know what? That picture that you see right now, that might have been the last picture you ever saw of me. The bus skids off the road, goes flying through the air and crashes down on my side of the bus. My face goes through the glass.
In
the
Iceland. Street
in Iceland. An hour and a half away from any hotel, any hospital. And the craziest thing happened. I tore my shoulder in two places. Joshua and I had just done our body fat scan. Have you ever had a body fat scan? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what your number is. Last year, January, my number was 33% body fat and the highest weight I'd been since I was pregnant. And you know what? I said, that's okay. I've been teaching my pitch classes. I have 77,000 students. What? I work behind a desk really hard. I mean, can't be bothered doing all this. And Joshua keeps going to the gym and winning competitions. And so at some point, he turns to me as we're driving home and the volcano explodes in Iceland. And my PTSD is going, what's going on? And then he says, there's a bodybuilding competition in our hometown in 3 months, and he needs to be part of it to qualify for the Olympia. I'm like, good for you. He said, there's a category for women over 60. I said, good for them. And then Natasha, something whispered in my ear and said, go for it. I'm like, go for what? You don't understand. I haven't worn a bikini since I was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I have no desire. I got molested when I was that age. I have no desire to wear a bikini at all. And something said, go for it. With a torn shoulder, I'm going to what? I get home, and I don't know quite why I said this, but I've got a mastermind that's got hundreds of people on a Wednesday night. I go online, and I say, guys, in 99 days, I'm going to be on stage in a bodybuilding competition in a bikini. I hung up and thought,
you just committed.
But what the hell did I just do?
You committed, and you did it in front of people, and that's when we make shit happen. Bingo. I remember doing that. Really quickly, I'll interject. I stood on stage once back in 2021, the minute COVID lifted. I was on stage, and I said, guys, I'm committing here with you today to go and build a orphanage. And what's great, and I said, I'm going to do it by the end of 2023. Crazy thing. I didn't go and build an orphanage, but it got me out there. And guess what? I went and built a school for 600 children for the charity Pencils of Promise. And it's called the Graziano School, and it's in Guatemala and Mazatenango. So maybe I didn't achieve the exact goal, but I did something bigger.
Huge, huge.
And I share that because when we commit, when we stand on that stage, wherever it is, Zoom, family reunion, wherever the fuck you are, and you commit to something greater than you, you do it for others. It doesn't become about you anymore. It becomes about them. So share with me the final part of the story.
So the final part of the story is two things. One, now, this is interesting for us women. Mm-hmm. On day 67, mm-hmm. I was in the gym, and all of a sudden, I start seeing something really weird. What had come up for me was part of being molested when I was 15. I had hidden. And all of a sudden, when I got past a certain weight, because I had hid it somewhere in my body, I had a weird epiphany about what happened. And I have a technique, and I let that go. And all of a sudden, I was supposed to be doing this. Everything just fell off of me. I lost 35 pounds, 13% body fat. And I got on stage, and that photo that you see now is my after.
You look so good. I cannot believe this transformation.
Well, okay, but the best part was when I walked off stage was to look at my beautiful man's eyes. Joshua, come here for a second.
Yes, we've been talking about you. We have to show you off.
Is that too cube movable?
This is Joshua.
Come here. Gotta come. Because I'm going to tell a story. I want you to do something.
Okay, we're on the final 1 minute of this show. Right.
So I said to them a story that sounds almost too good to be true. You pulled up on your motorcycle on our kind of first date in Los Angeles, and I asked you, what are you doing here, and what did you say?
I said that I'm not very religious, but something told me that you needed me.
Told you.
That's the exact line. That is the exact line.
And the funny thing is that I've never rehearsed any type of line to pick up a girl at all. And when she asked me what I was doing there, it's like, that's what came out. It was so authentic.
Did you know? Did you just know when you guys met?
No, not really. But I do know that when I first saw her, because I walked into a hotel room in Vegas, and she was in the living room area, and just when I saw her, she was doing this thing.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like there's like God rays were just coming down.
I know, you do feel that around her. She's amazing. I love it. Yeah. I'm so happy for you guys.
By the way, she's never done this before. What do you think of spin gym, just real quick, as a professional bodybuilder?
As a professional, I use it to warm up with.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, I'll sit here, first thing I do, put my headphones on, and I just start going, just get my body loose.
It's scary how strong it is.
Wow. And then after I'm done.
Craziest story ever that this professional world champion bodybuilder would love my little product.
So you're moving your hand in all these different directions. We need to go and watch your stuff. Okay, yeah. You're definitely someone we need to go watch and learn. Forbes, it's been amazing having you on today. I could do this all day with you. I think you're adorable. I literally love having you on. Thank you for teaching me so much about pitching, about believing in yourself. Today, I'm personally taking away how much I can do if I believe in myself. How much I can get done if I decide and commit to something. Mm-hmm. You taught me that that little girl that I was, I am no longer, and I've transformed into something else. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. You know, we get to so do inspirational.
That? Because mm-hmm. you're doing this show, you get to go out to so many other people and be that role model. Because when I look at you and I can feel that transformation that you've come from, that success is possible in whatever shape. And then also, the last thing for you, because I'm a little bit older than you, enjoy the ride.
Thank you.
Don't miss that because you've been so busy doing. Mm. And that's the only advice I would say, is that enjoy it, take photos and videos, because at some point when you get to look back on it and go, man, I did all that, there's this sense of pride and ownership. And I'm so glad that I've gone through this life the way I am, but the crazy thing is I feel like I'm just starting. So I'll share my book with you. I was very inspired by your book.
Thank you.
So Pitch Secrets A to Z is going to come out in a couple of months. My feature film called Black Creek, just crazy story. So she starts out as actress, and last year I invested in a friend of mine's film, and she turned to me and said, are you still acting? And I'm like, yeah. It's a martial arts Western action picture.
Oh my God,
and
you
I am the bad girl. It's done. It's on Amazon and Prime right now. Go to Black Creek and watch me be one badass girl in the old Wild West.
I'm so excited to come see it, Queen. You are so inspirational. Thank you so much for being here today. You've definitely sparked some real excitement in so many people's lives. I can feel it. I want to hear your comments. Share this episode with a friend. If there's somebody that you know needs this today, go send it to them. The Queen of Pitch, the infomercial goddess who has done so many sales, I mean, with a B. That is incredible. You are such an inspiration. Actress, can't wait to see this movie. Back into the acting.
Yep.
You're such a natural. And the book.
And then what's next? Where are you going to find Natasha and Forbes?
Ooh,
think about that.
That's a really good point.
I know.
Let's think about that.
Okay.
Let's do some more together.
Stay tuned.
We'll see you guys soon.